Everybody, drop your buffs.
Welcome back to Drop Your Buffs. I'm Sean Ross.
I'm Evan Ross Katz.
And we're here talking Survivor 46, Episode 2, Scorpio Energy. I almost said, unfortunately, we're here talking Survivor 46. But it's these 2-hour episodes. Do you know?
It's okay, the 2-hour episodes.
Here's my take. Here's my hot take, because all of the comments I've seen, and maybe it's our corner of the internet that we've created, or that people are not liking the start of Survivor 46. And, you know, we talked about it last week. I gave the disclaimer up front that, you know, if you don't want to hear criticism of the show, leave now. And then I think I over-disclaimered it, because by the end of the episode, I felt like we didn't come around that we were like, this is a great episode of TV, but it was kind of like a normal discussion. I don't think we went too hard on it. That's my take. And I feel like my take for episode 2 was that certainly far too long. I would go in the cutting room with a machete on this episode. But I think if I were given the task of creating a 45-minute episode of Survivor with the footage we were given in this 90-minute without commercials episode of Survivor, I could have made a decent 45-minute episode. Like, I think there was stuff here.
I totally agree, and I think 95% of people listening agree. But the problem is, I don't have time for a 2-hour episode.
Yeah.
And when you show me just as much unusable footage within usable footage, the sum of the parts ultimately ruins the whole. So, yeah, I think there were a number of moments that I'm eager for us to discuss. But, I mean, I'm already ixnay on the 90-minute, and then you take it to 2 hours, and then on top of that, there was no reason for this episode to be 2 hours, you know? So, you know, maybe there would be a double elimination or some big twist that, like, mitigated the need for more time. But there was so much that happened in this episode that even the good stuff, even the relevant stuff, was an overabundance to the point of it really being frustrating. And I did just notice some editing in this episode that kind of bummed me out. I would zoom in on that moment, the Taylor Swift Metallica moment, which, like, had they just kept the camera on them and gone through it, I would have really liked that moment. Like, I really actually think it was quite funny and compelling, and they were really able to go toe-to-toe on it. And yeah, it was like this showing of like different worlds and blah, blah, blah. But the cutaways to the reaction and then the talking heads explaining it, I just kept thinking, if this was Borneo, this would be such a great moment to really capture, of just like how bored these people are and the ways they connect and where their brains go under this duress. But instead, it just felt so, I don't know, it felt so aware of itself in a way that I disengaged from it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you said if this was Borneo, because I was listening to On Fire with Jeff Probst and Dee from Survivor 45 for the first time this season, because I wanted to get a flavor of what's going on over there. And they also compared this scene to Survivor Borneo for different reasons. And so I want to take this opportunity to plug our Patreon after show, which every week we do an after show to accompany our regular recaps of Survivor 46 over on the Patreon. And that is going to be a point of discussion. Evan, I'll tell you everything they said and you can react in real time, because whew, it's a doozy.
Okay.
So let's talk about some of the key things that happened in this episode. And we can certainly talk about where we went wrong with the editing and stuff like that. But I do want to focus in on the tribe that everybody's talking about, this purple tribe, Yanu, and all of the dynamics going on over there, because there's a lot of internet conversation about Banu and whether he is bringing sort of like old school chaos. That was a question that one of the patrons asked: is he bringing old school chaos to the show? And is Kenzie potentially, apparently she's being perceived as somewhat of a bully towards Jess. I'm having a hard time seeing that, but I'd be curious to get your take on like what's going on over on this tribe socially.
So should we do start with Banu?
Let's start with Banu.
So I would say overall, actually on both of those fronts, it's really too early to tell. I think that this new era of Survivor would like to have you believe that at the start of episode 2, all the dynamics are already locked in. But that's just not the case. I mean, there are these moments throughout the episode where people are commenting on each other's personalities from the perspective of like, I love her, but she's so blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you love her after 3 days? Like, isn't it just like, I just met this person and they're kind of annoying. You know what I mean? Like, there's just mm-hmm. this attempt to create this like settled in quality and like, this is who we are as a tribe. And like, this is the tribe dynamic. And it's like, you just met. Like, the dynamic is going to continue to shift and evolve. So with regards to Banu, I sort of found myself going back and forth between he's obviously a big personality. Big personalities are what we tend to crave on a show like this. But there is that like very new era self-awareness where he like comes in and then does something like that of that of a big person with a big personality and then does a talking head. And it's like, I'm the kind of person that just has a big personality. And it's like, okay. So there's that quality about him. But I just would say we need more time with him to really get a sense of things. I don't have a strong reaction one way or the other, but I would give him like, obviously we'll play the game formally, but I would give him Starless Rising in the sense of like, he has my attention.
Yeah. I will say, let's stay on Banu for a second, because there's a couple things I want to say here, which is that I did think, even before we were prompted by a patron, I thought this is a little bit old school. And I'm sort of like talking out of both sides of my mouth here, because on one hand, for all the reasons that you've just described, that that's the self-awareness in the talking head about it that turns me off a little bit. But when it's playing out on the screen, like when he sort of like loses it after they lose the challenge, even before the challenge when they're doing the mat chat and he talks about Gandhi being on a hunger strike and then the tribal council's sort of like soliloquy that he gave, I thought that that is exactly what I wanted, right? Like these people, Banu and Jess, were being told they're not good at the game and it's really frustrating that they're here. Well, that's what I like. Like, I want a mix of people who are good and not good, or understand the game but are not good players of the game. Like, that is what I have been craving in the new era, and we're getting it. I think the way it's been packaged up and shown to us, I'm not the biggest fan of, but I've got my eye on him, as you say. Like, I want to see how this plays out, because this could get a little messy. And, like, I'm here for messy.
Yeah. Again, though, it's just sort of like when you only have 5 people on a tribe in episode 2.
Yeah.
It's just sort of boring, because it's like, even looking at, to talk briefly, to jump over to, is her name Vetus?
Venus.
Venus. To jump over to her, it's like, if you're, it's like her fate's sealed, you know, right now. Like, she's not vibing with anyone. And so where's she going to go from here? And I think with these 6-person tribes, and then again with this one, when you're already down to 5, I just wish there was more wiggle room to try and get your footing. I mean, I'm reminded of, you know, how we're recapping Nicaragua right now, and you have a character like the public speaker.
Holly,
you have a character like Holly, who seemed inevitably to be the second boot of the season. And here we are now, I think we just finished episode 10, and she's on good footing. And it's like, you actually were able to weasel your way out of a bad situation before. And it's not to say it never happens in a new era, but it's really, really hard when it just takes 3 votes to knock someone out at this place in the game. 3 votes to go home on episode 2. I just don't think that's a fun dynamic to have play out, not to mention the fact that we barely got time. We got time with Venus's tribe because of Venus, what Venus was offering, but we really didn't get much with the other tribe.
Yeah, I will say, I think if I was imagining this season having, say, 10-person tribes or something like that, you could see a situation in which Banu and Jess, who both seem to be, you know, during the episode, certainly Jess is gone now, but they both had sort of one foot out the door because of the numbers on the tribe and the dynamics, where if we were on a 10-person tribe, you could easily see an alliance of four be like, well, let's just pick them up. They can be on the bottom. Like, we'll make them feel comfortable, but those are votes and we can use votes. And it's not threatening that they don't know the game. In fact, that's going to work to our advantage much later when we can just axe them. And so let's keep them around. And then that makes it a lot more interesting because you might have a situation where they're being used for a vote. Or where, you know, the entire tribe is like, we've had enough of Banu and we're all just going to, like, you know, get rid of him. And we still have enough wiggle room here with the numbers that we can pull somebody else in and maintain the numbers of our majority alliance. Where, as you say here, it's just like, it's just a matter of like, which one is it going to be and which configuration of three votes or four votes are we going to use to get them out?
I just don't think there's enough room to really to go many places. I will say Jess really caught my attention this episode. Jess really strikes me as someone that I would be friends with in real life, which I don't often feel when I watch Survivor. But I just thought it was like, you know, the meme of the girl at the bodega and she's by the glass and she puts the bag of chips over her head and it says, I'm so crazy.
Yeah.
That's what the commentary about Jess was giving me. Cause they're like, Jess eats ants. She's so quirky. And I'm like, Well, in season one, we ate rats. So I just, nothing about Jess, what they were showing us, was giving us quirky, especially when you compare to like Carolyn, for instance, on 44, when we saw an actual quirky person, in my opinion. So with Jess, I just was sort of like, it just seems like she's a personality mismatch with these people. But I don't know if, like, I think that they were trying to make the edit of like Jess the weirdo outcast. And instead, I think it was just like, of the four other people here, Jess really isn't connecting. But I don't think that's a reflection. I didn't get the sense that it was a reflection of Jess or her quote unquote quirkiness. I think, again, it was just, okay, not everyone vibes. You know, you look at like Soda and Tevin, for instance, and it's like, it's day, again, episode two, and they seem completely locked and loaded till the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sort of just get these, sorry guys for the ding in, you sort of get these dynamics now where it's like someone like Soda and Tevin never have to worry.
Yeah.
Seems.
I want to go back to the Jess personality thing because Jess, I think, the reason she's sticking out to these people is that Jess is normal. Jess is a normal person. And you have this scene very early where Kenzie's walks out to this rock formation with Banu and Jess and like makes this comment of, oh, wouldn't it be great if we went to the final three, which I feel like is maybe a little messy of Kenzie to do because like with such a small tribe, it's so easy for that to get back. And I thought she was with Tiff and Q. And so like that, and it does get back very quickly because Jess tells Q. But in that moment, Jess says, well, I need to think about this a little bit because like, and if you take a step and at the time when I saw that, I thought, well, bad move. If somebody's offering you a final three, just like say yes. But at the same time, there's been this narrative about Jess that she's unwilling to strategize. And every time that we get shown her being unwilling to strategize, she's like, can I like have a moment before I react to this? Like, I want to think this through, which may not bode well in the long term for Jess if she were to have stayed, because people do want to have these conversations and I don't know how long they have to have them. But it seems like a very normal person, real world reaction to, you know, somebody presenting you with like a really big decision to make. And so it seemed to me that Jess was not quirky. She was quirky in comparison to maybe the kinds of people that typically get cast in New Era Survivor.
But also, I would ascribe that quirkiness to all the other ones and not her. I would say they're all quirky and she's the right. Non-quirk.
Yeah. Yes, I know. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. She's quirky because she's not quirky in this group, which I guess is what you were saying.
There's just something about, again, it's episode two, and it's like all the dynamics are fully locked and loaded at the start of this episode. And I don't know if that's the players or the edit or what have you, but there's just very little of like anyone getting to know anyone. It just seems like everything is fully set. It's like they're trying to give like a mid-season episode feel. And I just think there needs to be more opportunities for people to explore. And I go back to what I was saying about Soda and Tevin, where it's like all of a sudden we're presented as like they're giving us final two in the sense of like how we're seeing them interact. It seems like they really are like they go and have their separate conversations, but all the information is shared between the two of them. And again, it's like, is that so? Or like, is that just that we're seeing them? I don't know, but it feels that way.
Yeah. And yet. And certainly that's how it's been presented. And yet, it's such a drastic shift from what we saw in episode one in a lot of ways, because in episode one, we had that moment where Randon, you know, was all worried about Venus and her hunting for an idol. And he goes and tells Sota, you got to watch out for her. She's a poverty light. And you had Sota go and have Venus's back and be like, this is what's being said about you. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, it's like, I don't like Venus. I don't trust her. And yeah. So it's like, well, what happened overnight that this shift has occurred? Because now the story is Tevin and Sota versus Randon and Venus.
Yeah.
And it, like, I'm just a little bit lost in that.
It's giving that last episode of The Traitors, or maybe two episodes ago, where they try to make us believe that, like, MJ might vote for Phaedra because she's, like, thinking about it, when it's like everything that we've been given indicates that MJ is working with Phaedra and was, like, not going to make that vote. And so it's one of those things where it's like, we've been told all this information otherwise, and all of a sudden they present something that's the inverse and then make you think that that's just how it is, instead of recognizing, to your point, if they would have given us something that was like, you know, after a good night's rest, I woke up this morning and I realized blah, 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 then you can thread the needle. But instead it's just sort of like you end up feeling a sense of Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, but and with 2 hour episodes, like there was there was plenty of time to explain sort of what happened here. Can we talk about Venus a little bit while we're on her? Because I think she's emerging as another person that is taking up a lot of space on the Survivor corner of the internet in terms of the conversation. There has been a lot of talk about, you know, potential villains in the show. And I don't know that we've seen villainous behavior from anybody. I think we've seen, like, maybe some pettiness or something like that. But I think Venus is one of these people who maybe doesn't have the filter. And so, like, especially coming back from the challenge, when we get a whole scene from Venus talking about how her toe got run over, and talking about, and there was other stuff with, like, Sota doesn't want to talk to her at all. She asked to talk to her and it's like, no. And so what are your thoughts on Venus as, like, a potential villain for this season?
Well, she strikes me as an interesting character, but again, to the Holly comparison I made earlier, when you're in Venus's position and you're going to be this outrightly villainous without a single ally that you could potentially, you know, move through the game with, or a circumstance where you're willing to sort of work with someone in order to get to a greater good. Acting like this on, you know, episode two, you're in a corner, and I don't know how you get out of that.
Well, she does have a plan. I think that's what makes this a little bit exciting, is that she spoke to Randon, who found the Beware advantage, potentially has an idol, and they've, and look, this is something that I think is a silver lining of the episode, is this story where it's like enemies to allies, where Randon was previously gunning for Venus, but now he realizes, wait a second, I'm on the outs of, like, this Hunter, Sota, Tevin alliance, and so I kind of have to work with Venus all of a sudden. And so they have this truce, and he's like, I've got this idol, and, like, we could do something, or I will have this idol, hopefully, and we could do something with it. And I think Venus is sort of, like, maybe overstepping, and she's, like, two steps ahead of herself, where she's like, well, I'm going to use this to get back at Sota.
It's, like, it's fucking episode two. Like, it's like everything you just said, and this isn't a comment on you. You just said, like, 100 different things, and it's like, I just met this lady last week. And I'm supposed to all of a sudden, like, be having conversations about, like, is she a great villain? And, like, how is she going to get out of blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, I don't even know you. So, again, it's like there's no time to establish anything. It's just, like, strategy, gameplay, out the gate. And so, again, I definitely, like, it's Starless Rising for me with Venus, where it's like I certainly have my eye on her. She is not a flop casting choice. Like, she has cleared a few bars. But for me to be having, like, a this episode two conversation about how Venus is going to potentially get herself out of this pickle she's in, I'm like, I didn't even know we had a pickle jar.
Okay.
What?
The pickle jar. Okay. Well, pickles are green. Let's go over to the Green Tribe, because I do want to talk about this Metallica, Taylor Swift moment a little bit more.
Were gooning.
They were gooning in the editing bay. I want, like to your point, I would love to see the uncut footage of this.
Yeah. It's like literally, and give us I don't even know Metallica. Scene.
I just want to see how it goes down. I want to know how much time there was in between each song title. Because like, if I was playing that game, I, even with, you know, an Alanis Morissette, I would need to like stop and think for a second.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if you would though, because couldn't you just go chronologically? You like, you know, the album well, as well enough.
But, you know, so, sometimes you could stumble and then you're like, wait a second, right. I skipped a song.
But then move on. But I'm just saying it's like, I think it'd be easier than you're positioning it with someone you are that okay, big well, of a fan of.
Maybe on the after show we'll play.
Who would be? So you would do Alanis.
Yeah.
Who do you think
what would you be? Do? You would do like, what, Christina?
Yeah.
Yeah. that was a patron question. That's why I had it in mind.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So,
but do you, what do you think about what I said though? Sorry, but just about the sort of like my reaction to the Venus thing, does that vibe for you at all?
Yeah. I mean, like I get where you're coming from, but you know,
and you're kind of like, but this is the scenario. So like,
yeah, well, I am like, well, so it is episode two. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like,
and this is what's happening. I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just telling you, I feel like I am a big proponent of like establishment, and I don't mean
for sure.
I don't mean like establishing. I should say not establishment, because I just for clarity. But like, I like world building, and I just feel like we get thrust into this show now, and I get it. For some people, that's like they would argue, yeah, but like this is fast paced Survivor. This is new era. And sure, but I just think a lot of these moments get unearned because I'm like, I'm still getting my bearings.
Yeah. So, for example, with Venus and her toe getting run over, I think that that's like a great moment when she comes back and is like, you guys need to not run over my toe. You need to listen to me in the challenges. I think that that's a good moment. I think when we talk about the conversation that has transpired online around the moment and other moments like that and what's going on the Purple Tribe as well, that then the conversation suddenly like, wait, are there villains on Survivor? Are these people mean? Are they bossy, etc.? It's like, we do need a little more evidence, I think, before we start saying that there's villains on the show. Mm-hmm. But we can talk about whether there's glimmers and whether there's hope. You think back to Survivor 45, and I think we talked about this last week also potentially, but with Emily Flippin, right? Like there was so much potential in those first couple episodes and you felt like, wow, this is the direction this season is going in. And episode three, that's all over. That mm-hmm. Emily Flippin villain story is over and mm-hmm. we get something very different for the rest of the season. And so, yes, it is very hard, I think, to have these like broad conversations about like, where is Survivor at this season? Is this a shift in any way? We have heard that like, this is potentially a mean season. If this is the level of mean, I think we've seen much more mean on Survivor. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think we have, period. So I'm like, is this another situation where, you know, we're taking scraps and then blowing it up to be like and making a proclamation about where the show is at? Because I guess that's where I think we are too early to be having these conversations.
And on that note of like the sort of mean thing, I'm not aware of any for context, everyone, I'm not aware of any of the conversation that's happening online around this season, just like for transparency's sake. But like, if there is any pushback to people being like, if there's pushback to Kenzie, is it just Kenzie's treatment of Jess, or would it also be Q?
I think it would probably, yeah, be sort of like,
he's
that
also the one like kind of making her look like an idiot. My point being, that's, in my mind, I'm like, yes, this show is definitely making, either the show and or them are making Jess out to be very, very dumb. At no point do I then say, I bet Jess is dumb in real life. You know what I mean?
Right.
I am able to be like, Jess is acting very stupidly in the game of Survivor, and I'd love to be friends with her, and I bet you she's a really good time, and I would never have any value on her intellect after watching her play stupidly on two episodes of Survivor. Does that make sense?
Well, but I think that that's what people are feeling. I think when somebody says, and I don't know how much this is being said, like I've done a very cursory scan. When someone says that someone's being mean or being a bully, I think usually that's coming from a place of the audience feeling like it's unjustified, right? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like they're on your side and that like Jess didn't deserve the treatment that she got. My point is, I don't think the treatment was that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we've seen much worse treatment.
I don't think it was bad treatment, but I think it was incongruous to what we've seen in the new era of them actually making someone look like an idiot and have like multiple people like not relishing in the idiocy, but like walking her like out to sea. You know what I mean? Like, we haven't really seen that level of, like, obviously we've seen deceit, but this was like they were trying to create genuine social bond as a way to literally mislead her. And that's a little bit more, quote unquote, villainous than I think we've seen in this era. But yeah, it's all relative.
Yeah. And I think also people are like sort of hyper focused on the fake idol that was given to Jess, and that was mean, you know, but it's not mean. It's not mean in the same way that Bob gave Randy the fake idol in Gabon. That was purely to humiliate. This actually had a game function, which was to prevent her from playing her shot in the dark.
And also, mind you, we also have the Eric moment in Micronesia, which was like the biggest example, I think, on Survivor of people trying to make someone look like a fucking idiot, you know, and it worked.
But that also had a game function, too, was like to get Eric out and prevent him from getting to the final three or two in that case, which they didn't know about.
Yeah.
So I think there is like there's sort of like different layers here, like both the Eric vote out and even like Ozzy leaving the stick in Micronesia, like that anything around like giving up an idol or having somebody play a fake idol usually has a game function. It's to make them feel safe so that they're either not scrambling or not playing a shot in the dark or whatever it might be, or that they're not immune at that tribal council. Whereas the Randy moment was purely to humiliate. I think that maybe what people are picking up on is the way that the only thing that I can find was the way that Tiff and Kenzie were talking about Jess. And I think Bonu was sort of like wrapped up in that they were like, this is like, these people don't understand the game. They're dumb. They're clowns. This is remedial clown school, which like I don't mind that. But I'm also like maybe a little bit of a mean person, but I just don't think that that's bullying or mean. I think it's like people, this is how people talk.
But also, like, if that's bullying or mean, that's life. You know what I mean? Like, if that is the case, it's like maybe we would do better by recognizing that this is real instead of acting like it's not, sort of a default mode of a lot of how people go through life, and perhaps we'd all build a thicker skin as a result. I mean, this is more of a philosophical question on the larger end, but like, yeah, I think I'm speaking for myself here, and I wonder if a lot of gay listeners can relate to this, but like, I think that like I was teased relentlessly in my youth, and I look at it now, and obviously I wouldn't do it all over again if I could, but I also recognize like the fortitude I built by having to overcome like these losers. And again, I had to in myself learn these guys are fucking losers, not me, right? Like I had to figure that all out. And I think people often can relate to that as far as like the challenges of people thinking that we're quirky. I think we can take it upon ourselves to be like, no, if I am quirky, then that's fine. Or no, I'm not quirky. You're quirky, you bitch.
Or I'd rather be quirky.
There you go. Yeah. You got it. Oh my God. It's, hello. Do you know Mean Girls, the musical?
No, I don't.
We are giving, there's, I believe it's the 11 o'clock number, but I could be wrong, which is a Janis song called I'd Rather Be Me. And it's basically, you know, she could be a lot of things, but you know what she'd rather be?
Me.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift, me. There's the song.
There you go.
Did you see the Mean Girls movie?
No.
The musical, obviously?
Yeah, no, not yet. I will, maybe. Okay. Yeah, I will, probably.
Haven't seen it. Missed that one.
Love Tina Fey.
Did she, like, write the book?
No.
For the musical? No?
Wait, the book?
Or whatever you... Yeah.
Yes.
This is something I've been meaning to ask you. When somebody says, write, like, when there's a musical and somebody's, like, written the book for the musical, I've always assumed that meant the dialogue and not the songs. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, typically, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. So Tina Fey is not involved in the musical.
Tina Fey is involved. I thought you meant the original book that the 2004 Mean Girls was based on, which she did not write. No. Yes, she wrote the book to both the musical and the movie musical.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Wait, sorry. Are the musical and the movie musical different?
Yes. She rewrote much of the book for the movie
musical. I didn't know that. Is that why people don't like the movie? Because people love that musical, don't they?
No, I don't think people love that musical.
Oh, I thought people loved that musical.
I mean, I think some people love it, but I think it's a I don't think it's like a beloved musical. I think Legally Blonde is more
more quirky people love the musical.
Quirky people, yeah.
Okay. All right. I do want to touch down on the Green Tribe beyond the Taylor Swift and Metallica stuff, because we got a couple of Survivor history shout outs in this episode. Of course, last episode we had the poverty reference. Here we have Maria and Charlie come together. Suddenly, again, it's like overnight, the dynamic has changed on the tribe. For reasons I don't fully understand, where it's like, okay, we get the recap of like Charlie's in the middle between the boys and the girls. With the girls, they've got four, but with the boys, they've got three. So now what? And they're like, well, the boys could pull in Maria, who's got this extra vote. Now suddenly we've got like five out of nowhere. And so why don't we do that? And so then we get this new story where it's Charlie and Maria are a tight duo, because otherwise Charlie would be the bottom of the alliance with the girls. And Maria says that her favorite alliance in Survivor history is Denise and Malcolm, and she wants them to be Denise and Malcolm. Do you see Denise and Malcolm for them?
Well, it's episode two, so I would need a little more time. It's like I'm annoyed with myself almost sometimes, but it is one of those things of like, let me figure that out in my head. It's almost like I want Survivor affirmations, or like Ryan Kaiser or one of those great Survivor accounts, to post this, to like have seen the scene without the cutaway and without the Malcolm reference, and for them to be like, it's giving. But for the show to do it, it's like, you're not allowed to say that. Let us say it. It would be one thing if we were further down the line and they sort of had this realization of like, but like for them to establish the alliance with the intention to play like these two, I don't find it very satisfying.
Do you want to hear something that, you're not going to care about, but that just a little pot behind the scenes podcast lore. Mm-hmm. Do you know that I know Survivor affirmations in real life?
No.
Yeah. I went to his New Year's Eve party. He's like a friend of a friend and whatever. Anyways, so a little crossover event. I don't know him well, but I've met him at two parties.
It's a good account.
Okay. So it's a great account. Very positive. It's a good antithesis to our podcast.
Yeah,
for sure. You get the good and the bad. Go follow Survivor Affirmations. Okay. So where do you think Charlie and Maria are going to go? Is there a right direction for them to go? Obviously, I want them to go with the girls, but we're not seeing the girls.
I just don't care. I don't care. I don't know what. We'll see. Watch this space. I don't know you. I don't know you. It's just hard. I feel like what's interesting is like with Drag Race and like the early episodes, we at least like have their runways to like have something to like say, like, this is what you've produced and done so far, mm-hmm. and here's how it stacks up against the competitors. But especially when you haven't gone to tribal, and when, you know, all we have is this interaction, which they set out an intention, which I guess the question now becomes like, what will their fate be? Well, you know, will they follow in the, and I guess, you know, it's very binary. Will they live up to the Denise Malcolm of it all, or will it fall apart? Will they, won't they? And I don't know them well enough to feel gripped to that, but I definitely think that like, again, if the option is to have this plot or to not have this plot, I will check the have plot box. But I'm not sort of like, I'm not pressing my fingers together saying like, what's going to happen next with these two? Because it's just sort of like, either they'll work well together and go far, or they won't.
Well, so, and this is the thing, again, like, not to just be a broken record, but this is the problem with the three tribe dynamic, is like, especially when you get these situations where a tribe keeps going to tribal council, like a Lulu tribe from last season, or like Ricard and Shan's tribe in 41, and you end up missing out on so much of being able to establish where people are sitting in the other tribes. And granted, it's only episode two, there's gonna be many more episodes before the merge, unfortunately. Yeah. And so like we could establish that, but like you look back to Survivor 41, where Erica's tribe never went to tribal council pre-merge, and therefore we never saw our winner because we had three tribes just divvy up in an episode, and like we only got so much from them. And like even with these longer episodes, yeah, we're getting more content, but we're not getting like a lot to sink our teeth into and be able to be like, okay, well, this is how these people are playing, and this is like, until those lines are drawn, you can't really talk about it. And a 2-hour episode, if we must have it, is a great opportunity to send to tribes to tribal council to like check those boxes.
Yeah. Let's like get things moving.
Because we had a very long challenge to sit through. In fact, they had a commercial break during the challenge. And then not only did they have a commercial break during the challenge, but when they came back, we had to have it like recapped in an editing flourish sort of way of like as if you were waking up from a coma. It was like blacking out and then coming in. You're hearing Jeff's voice with an echo. It's like, I think they're just building a puzzle. Like it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I do want to touch down on Liz because I feel like there's stuff to sink our teeth into with Liz, who was a big presence in the challenge with her chanting her tribe's name and then Yes You Can, almost louder than Jeff. But there's more Liz story back at camp where she continues to be bragging about the money she makes.
Good for her.
Good for her. But do you think Liz can find a man to marry her?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think she can do it.
Yeah.
We got in we didn't get in any trouble, but Liz was all up in the comments of the post I made of the Australian Survivor Talking Tribal, where Chrissy was finding out for the first time that U.S. Survivor was not even 39 days, which is already shorter than what they play in Australia, but is in fact now 26 days and called it pathetic. Liz was really defending the 26 days, and it got messy. Got messy in those comments.
It did. I was really surprised. I did think that, like, I think Chrissy was right. And like it's just sort of like a fact. And I think there's maybe the nuance that gets lost here is that like the survivor of today is easier for 100 reasons. While we can also recognize that like, yeah, it's not easy what these people are doing. It is easier. So when we sort of criticize the 26-day game, I know I joke a lot about the fact that, like, they're not even hungry. I am serious, but I do recognize like they're still playing Survivor, albeit Survivor Lite. It's still Survivor.
And I will add also like to be fair and to be fair to Liz, I'm watching Australian Survivor Titans v Rebels, and like they are making overflowing pots of rice and beans every single day. So like they're eating good on that show, where in Survivor 40, like, yeah, they're finding the odd papaya or whatever it is, but they aren't getting rice and beans. And so, but like, but to me, it doesn't make a difference. Like it really doesn't make a difference. And in fact, Australian Survivor far exceeding U.S. Survivor, especially, you know, having to be able to watch them at the same time and compare them. It's like, well, if any of this is the result of them being fed, then just feed them, leave them out longer. But I think there's something to leaving them out longer and having these days in between for some of these dynamics to like really make sense when they're shifting, or when there is a thing where Venus is like, oh, like fuck these people, like to have a night to sleep on that before there's like another action in the game, like an immunity challenge or a tribal, to be able to like sort of sit on that and have the relationship repair is, I think, a little bit more interesting to me as a viewer.
Mm-hmm. I guess I would say my favorite moment of the episode by far was when they did the cutaways to Soda grabbing the idol. Because it was a great example. Yeah. You know how I'm always complaining about the everything is tell, don't show? That was like a great example of showing. Because it's like they set it up and I was like, oh, it's probably not. And then it was even funnier than it was promised to be. Because it was like, at first it was like, because in the first example, she doesn't, I mean, she grabs it, but like, no big deal. But the second one, she really grabs it. And then the Venus's face, facial reaction in the moment, and then the obliviousness of Soda. I was like, this is what I like.
Yeah, I was really surprised that it came up because I had seen it online. Like, I'd seen it after episode one, then people being like, whoa, why did Soda grab the idol like that? And then I watched it happen in real time because I was sort of like, had that in my mind from last week and being on Twitter. And I was like, oh my God, she did it again. And I was like, oh, I really wish they'd talk about this. And lo and behold, they did talk about it. So have to give them credit there. And that there's another reason, like Venus is striking to me, because like the fact that she's talking about that. And I loved that it was one of those on the fly confessionals, which I've said many times.
Yes.
I really love. It's just,
yes,
she's
yes,
sitting yes. in the shelter. No one happens to be around. So she's talking to the camera. I love that. Yeah. I do think Venus has like a lot of potential as a TV character. Like I think she works well on screen and sort of like wears her emotions on her sleeve in an interesting way.
If Venus is Parvati, I need her Amanda to sort of like, she has no, and I know yeah. you mentioned that other guy and the idol situation and the possibility that they might like be forced to work together, but I'm not really talking even like strategically. It's like, I want Venus to have someone that she makes like a genuine connection with so that her arc on this show is not just like, I'm abrasive and no one really likes me, but maybe they drag her along or something. I'd like her to mm-hmm. form a friendship. And I did appreciate, from everything we saw from Soda, it seemed like Soda wasn't counting Venus out. Like, it was sort of like, I thought we had this connection, maybe we don't, but like, what she was giving me, and maybe this is just my perception, was like, the door is not closed, right. but that she's just sort of realizing the approach has to be different. And I think that's sort of something that I crave, which is not someone being locked into a feeling about someone, but someone recognizing, I felt this way yesterday, I feel this way today, this is how I'm going to maneuver moving forward. But she wasn't like, oh, I just had this bad talk with Venus, I need her out.
Yeah.
Because I think you get a lot of that.
And what I like about Soda is like there is like a little bit of a lack of self-awareness, or there's like a lit there. Like I do think that, or sorry, did I say Soda? Yeah, I think Soda. What I like about Soda is that she does have this sort of slight lack of awareness of like herself and what she's saying. And I did watch when they have that like sort of confrontation, sort of where Venus says like, you know, you guys need to listen to me when you're in challenges, you guys need to do this. And she kept saying, you guys. And Soda's like, why are you saying it's just about me? And she's like, mm-hmm. You said you. And it's like, no, she had been saying you guys, but like to Venus's point that she's about to make is like, it's all about you, Soda. And so like, I like that, you know, hopefully that goes somewhere because I find mm-hmm. that sort of thing really interesting. And I think that that's like the benefit that we have of like the Banus and the Jesses and the Kenzies over on the other tribe, that it's like, there is like a slight lack of self-awareness, which I haven't seen on the show without it being like really overtly shown to me that like this person's a dummy in a while. I haven't seen it in a while. So I'll give them credit for that. One last thing I want to bring up before we wrap this episode and go over to the after show is that it's just at Tribal Council. It's like, finally, we have a little bit of fireworks at Tribal Council, a little bit. And it's like, Jeff has to turn to Q and be like, whoa, Q, are you seeing this? Like, bet you didn't expect this at Tribal Council. It's just... like, once again, how far we've fallen.
Like, seek help. Seek help.
Okay, do you want to pick an emoji for the meme cap?
I got nothing.
Me neither. Is there an ant? Let's do an ant. There's an ant.
Okay, yeah, we'll do an ant. There we go.
Let's do an ant for Jess. Okay, with that, we've had to keep this one short because, you know, we're on time crunches here. We're going to be heading over to the after show to discuss some very pressing issues. So if you want to find that, you can go join our Patreon. The link to that is in the show notes to this episode. And you can find us on Instagram at Drop Your Buffs Pod, on Twitter at Drop Buffs Pod. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.